This webcast is a service of SDPB. More information at sd.net.
Good morning. The first case set for oral argument this morning is appeal number 30810 in the matter of the interests of JW. Ole Olson is present, will be arguing on behalf of the appellant JW, and Angela Shute is present, will be arguing on behalf of the state. Each side will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Olson, you'll have a 5-minute rebuttal. You can proceed, Mr. Olson.
May it please the court, counsel. Today the court has the opportunity to affirm what the South Dakota State Legislature made as part of the juvenile, or changes that the state legislature made as part of the Juvenile Justice Public Safety Improvement Act of 2015. And they followed that with a cleanup bill that is relevant as well in 2016, which was SB 158. Specifically, in those changes, they added the word restitution to Title 26, which is the juvenile code, solving what was developing into a divergence between the adult restitution and juvenile restitution case law. Prior to those changes, the only language within Title 26 dealing with restitution was that a court may require the child to pay for any damages done to property or medical expenses. In 2009, the late Justice Zinter penned In Re MDD, and despite restitution not being mentioned anywhere in the juvenile statutes, it was discussed and used interchangeably with the adult criminal statutes and Title 26. Amazingly, in that case, it involved a claim for medical expenses that were paid by Medicaid. The state had argued that the court should use the definition of victim found in 23A-282 subsection 5. As we know, since then, State v. Bryant in 2020 came out, penned by Justice Kern, and determined that under that definition of victim, Medicaid wasn't a victim, or wasn't defined as part of victim in our statutes. I believe that legislature has since taken care of that. But at that time, Justice Zinter's point was that in the definitions in 23A, words like crimes, plea of guilty, convictions had no place in juvenile cases.
But MDD was a status case, right? Who's a victim, who's not a victim? It didn't really have anything to do with causation, did it?
It did not.
But that's what brings us here.
Correct. That was kind of the start of the divergence. And the MDD's opinion was sound, and based on the language in Title 26, basically the only holding was that we're not limited to the definition of victim. The juvenile statutes are much broader.
Again, a matter of status.
Correct. Thank you. And that got followed up by People X Rel KK in 2010. And that was a narrow 3-2 decision with two justices, Justice Meyer, Henry, and Severson, only concurring in the result. And in that case, Chief Justice Gilbertson wrote for the majority, holding that a causal connection was not required in juvenile cases, even though in that case there was a causal connection.
So in that case, the court pointed to the fact that the terms in Chapter 23A28 do not have application in juvenile proceedings. So now we have juvenile statutes that specifically refer to a statute in Chapter 23A28.
Yes.
So we have to apply that now. How do we apply that?
Thank you. And that gets us exactly where I was headed is now it is the juvenile statutes are saying restitution as defined in 23A28, which brings all of those words into play, though they don't have a place, and I agree with that, in juvenile court. Most people, and I think the legislature falls under that, don't differentiate between adjudication and guilty or disposition and sentencing. The words that are used in juvenile court often aren't used outside of juvenile court, which I think is how we end up with a statute now pointing to the criminal code saying we want to use restitution as defined in the criminal code within the juvenile statutes.
So once we do that, how is there not a causation requirement now with juvenile restitution?
I believe that there is a causation requirement at this point, and that's why we're here, as I argued that there has to be a causal connection, and JW had admitted to being an accessory after the fact. He was originally had a petition for delinquency, which alleged that he had committed a first-degree burglary if he was adult, or he had aided and abetted reckless burning. A trailer fire occurred on July 5th, the day after July 4th. Three children were involved, and some fireworks. JW stood firm in that he told them no, not to enter the trailer, that he told them no, not to light fireworks, that he wasn't guilty of those things. We were set for an adjudicatory hearing to essentially go to trial on that. And we reached an agreement with the state that would allow him to be an accessory after the fact, because what he did admit to was after the fire had occurred, he lied to law enforcement about there being two other juveniles.
So, and I'll stop you there for a minute, because I just want the record issue here. There is not a transcript of that particular hearing, right?
Correct. Of the, I suppose you would call it an adjudicatory hearing, where he ended up just admitting we didn't have a trial or anything.
But we do have to determine what is it that he was adjudicated of, or what, if anything, did he admit to doing? And it's, you know, it's a little bit difficult when we don't, and you're making some representations here. I'm not sure whether they're in the record or not.
And I'm glad that you brought that up. I was planning on addressing that as well. I think that the court should be restricted to that he was adjudicated to of accessory after the fact, and those are the only facts that are not in dispute. I know in our briefing, both myself and the state referenced things that were in police reports that are in the settled record. However, I would argue those aren't proven facts, and
Isn't it whether it's admitted? I mean, under the adult restitution statutes and definitions, it could be something that he admitted to as well. But again, we need to have a record
correct
of that to show.
And I think under I think State v. Joyce is a good example that in Joyce, he pled guilty to leaving the scene of an accident where there was an injury. At his plea, he had admitted that he rear-ended the victim in that case, was scared because he didn't have insurance and left. I think he admitted to fault, but this court said that's not his criminal activity. His criminal activity was leaving the scene of the accident, and that didn't contribute to the damages that were suffered. I think the state could have solved that by filing or charging with like following too closely or something along those lines, but leaving the scene of an accident didn't work. That's akin to here. Accessory after the fact, what he admitted to doesn't have a causal connection to the fire that caused the damages and the charges. It was him lying to law enforcement to cover up for his friends afterwards. So my argument is there has to be a causal connection now that we reference the restitution definitions in 23A28(2), and that by doing so, the other definitions that define words that are used in that definition of restitution have to come with it. for instance, under subsection 5, victim is contained in the definition of restitution. Using any other victim without the legislature pointing, saying, no, you need to use something else, doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
The circuit court found it was significant that the legislature and the delinquency statute referenced specifically subsection 4, entitled to restitution, under subsection 4, which simply provides full or partial payment for the for pecuniary damages to a victim. Whereas the Chen statute references the entirety of 28, 23A, 28.2, which includes the definition of a victim. Curious. Your view of that's not significant from your perspective?
I don't believe so, respectfully, Chief Justice. Looking at the legislative history, in 2015, the legislature brought restitution into the juvenile statutes. They actually put the definition in the Chin statute in 26.8b in that year and forgot it in 26.8c when they removed the language that pointed towards the Chin statute for things that the judge could use in disposition. So it wasn't until 2016 that an emergency clause was used in, I believe it was SB 158 in 2016, to get the definition saying restitution as defined in 23A. At that time, both of them mirrored, and it was the full Penn site. Later, and I briefed this, later the legislature came back and made some changes unrelated to restitution at all, but they made some changes in the Chin statute, and one of the things they changed was they took off, they changed the format of the citation and took off the subsection 4 Penn site on the Chins.
So are we supposed to assume that they did that for no purpose?
The only thing I could surmise, because what they did had nothing to do with restitution or even that portion of the statute, is that they made the formatting the same for all the citations within the statutes. They changed, I believe, 3 different statutes, and the formatting on all of them changed, or all of them matched when they got done. And
except the delinquency.
Right, they didn't, in that change, they didn't touch the delinquency
they didn't go back
statute.
And modify that and say, oh, well, we actually intend to include all of 28.2 and those, including the definition of a victim.
Right, and I think it's important to note, Chief Justice, they weren't modifying restitution or anything in that change. They did change that statute, but it had nothing to do with the other changes they were making. They just changed how it was formatted and took off the subsection Penn site to match all the other citations in the statutes that they changed. That's the only reason I could see that made them take off the Penn site in that. And I also briefed, I don't think it necessarily matters. There's no other definition of restitution in all of Title 23A. So however you cite it, you're still only citing to that one word and that one definition of restitution, even if they were to say just restitution as defined in Title 23A. It would still take us to the same place. It's just nice that they put it the whole statute so that we can go directly there rather than have to look through the whole Title 23A to find where restitution is defined. That's the whole point of a pen or a citation, and a pen site is the preferred method to use. But I don't think it removes the fact that when restitution says victim and pecuniary damages, you still need definitions for what those are, and the only place logical to look for those is within the same statute that defines restitution, where they're already at. And that also leads to criminal activities in those definitions. So all of those words are defined and referenced just by saying restitution in 23A.
Backing off a little bit from this exercise of sort of parsing these statutes, which I think is useful. A causal connection between a juvenile's conduct and a restitution award seems like a very important and reasonable protection for the juvenile. What justification would there be to, and I know KK said what it said, but I've had a difficult time sort of getting my head around that. And when you take the statutes and you try to divine what the state of the law is, I can't help but come away from with the sense that at some point, how could we ever hold a juvenile responsible for something they didn't do? And isn't that a larger principle that permeates this case?
And if I may, I'm about out of time. Thank you for that, Justice. I have a problem with KK and its ruling that I reside with the concurring end result. That in that particular case, yes, there was a causal connection for the misprison of a felony. How, when we're talking about being in a child's best interest, it could ever be in their best interest to have to pay for something that someone else did. And furthermore, going into the second issue of whether or not that's a hardship or an injustice to that child, I don't know how you get there without having a causal connection, respectfully to the court that decided KK, but I am on the disagreement. I think that was a poor decision that leads to too much of a divergence between the statutes and will likely lead to injustices. And with that, I'm out of time.
Thank you. Ms. Shute, you can proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. When determining restitution in a juvenile proceeding, there is no causal connection required between a juvenile's actions and a victim's damages. However, a juvenile court must consider whether the order of restitution will impose serious hardship or injustice on a juvenile.
Why would there not be a causal connection? What justification could there possibly be for exempting juveniles from the protection that would otherwise apply to adults?
Your Honor, the juvenile justice system is different than the adult system in many different ways. And the focus of the juvenile justice system is what is in the best interest of the child. And as this court held in KK, sometimes it is in the best interest of the child to pay restitution in a case in which they had some involvement for the purposes of rehabilitation and affording them guidance, making them better individuals all around.
In its Gull decision, the U.S. Supreme Court held that many protections that are available to adults are also available to juveniles. And it seems that as a matter of fundamental fairness, if you don't have a causal connection between a juvenile's conduct and the financial obligation that you impose upon the juvenile, aren't you punishing a juvenile in transgression of every principle associated with juvenile justice?
I don't believe that it's necessarily punishment, Your Honor, because of the fact that the juvenile court also has to consider whether the order of restitution will impose a serious hardship or injustice, and that's different from the adult system.
How would it ever be in the best interests of a juvenile to impose a financial obligation upon them for the consequences and damage that they didn't commit?
Well, and I think that situation is a little bit different than what we have here.
But if you don't have a causal connection, that's exactly what could happen.
I believe that there is, though, in this case. And I know the juvenile court didn't find that there was a causal connection required, so the juvenile court didn't make any findings specific to whether there was, in fact, a causal connection. But I think JW's actions in this case...
But that's how you could win in that alternative way. But my question's different. If we're formulating a rule here, how could that ever be in a juvenile's best interest to impose a financial obligation upon them for conduct and damage that they didn't commit?
And, Your Honor, I think you have to look at what the juvenile was charged with in the first place. You have to look at the offense that they were ultimately adjudicated on, whether that's through an admission or through a finding by the court that they had committed the act. and find that, I mean, there are,
What offense was he adjudicated of?
I'm sorry, what was
What offense was he adjudicated of?
He was adjudicated of an accessory to a crime.
Does that involve the offense, the damage, the accessory to the crime after the fact?
If you're limited to what JW claims he did was that all he did was lie to the police, then no, but
that's what he acknowledged. That's what he was adjudicated for, is lying to the police, not doing the underlying crime.
Correct. And in the juvenile court, in making its decision, when considering the best interests, after finding that there was no causal connection required, held that he had more involvement than just that.
So in KK, it really seemed to hinge on the fact that the legislature had made no reference to the adult restitution statutes. Now our juvenile statutes clearly do. How then can we rely on the rationale in KK? Seems like it's a different deal now. Now we have to apply the statute that the legislature specifically referred to. So how do we apply that and not have to give definition to the term victim and pecuniary damages, which are in that subsection?
Yes, Your Honor. And the change that was made to 26.8c sub 7 subsection 1, the reference to restitution as defined in 23A.28.2, specifically subsection 4, that does just refer to restitution. There are other places in the juvenile code itself that defines what a victim is. 26.7A.36.1 says here's what a victim is in juvenile cases, and it refers to two different statutes.
For purposes of who gets to be in at a hearing.
Correct.
That particular statute.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and even those statutes you refer in there, one of them refers back to an adult criminal statute.
They're both adult
and
criminal
statutes. And they both seem to have language that also sure seem to imply a causation requirement with the criminal conduct.
28C4 does talk about a victim is a person who's the direct subject of a criminal act but has specific crimes listed there, a crime of violence and other crimes.
But why would we go to another statute relating to a specific thing, a different thing, not restitution, within the broad juvenile chapter that applies to all types of juvenile, ANNs, whatever the case may be, and not apply the definition in the statute that is referenced in the delinquency provision that we're interpreting here? That statute itself, the 28 starts with terms used by this chapter, or that the refers to the definition of the terms within this chapter. So why would we not apply those definitions and look elsewhere?
I would say what the legislature did in 2015 was referred specifically to the definition of restitution. And you look at the plain language of the statute, but if you also listen to, you know, the legislative history on that and the reasonings for amending that statute again in 2015, it was because they inadvertently omitted that section in 2016. They omitted it in 2015 with SB 73.
But the statute says what it says. We
yes,
don't
sir.
Need to look at legislative
and
history. You can read the statute.
Yeah, the statute says restitution as defined in subsection 4 of 23A.28.
Which requires us to look at what victim means. You're suggesting we should look at some other sections that define victim, as Justice Devaney is suggesting. Why don't we just look at the section that they referred to, not directly, but it directly related to the section that they specifically referred to?
Because the language that was changed was just for the definition of restitution. It changed what could be recovered as far as damages, from any property damage or medical expenses to any pecuniary damages.
So what's your definition of pecuniary damages? Is there a pecuniary damage that does not require a causation component? How that term is used?
That term does not appear in the juvenile code, so I think it would be appropriate in reading the statutes harmoniously to look at the definition of pecuniary damages.
In fact, the court, the circuit court, did that when it looked at the measure of damages, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And it cited specifically to subsection 3 of 23.
So why is it appropriate to look at that definition when determining the measure of damages, but not using the definition to define the term in the 23A28.2.4? So we can, you can use the definition for that purpose, but not to define the term specifically in the referenced subsection?
Again, the juvenile court found that there was no reference, specific reference to victim.
Well, I understand what the court found, but I want, what is your rationale? What is your rationale why that makes sense?
Because victim is defined otherwise in the juvenile code. I think you look at those definitions for victim. You know, juvenile proceedings are very different from the adult proceedings. They're closed. We do want to make sure that people that aren't supposed to be in the proceedings are not there. That's why we have a specific definition of victim, and I think that carries through the juvenile code even when determining whether restitution should be ordered.
So you were referring to the definition in the other statute that who gets to be in hearings, and you said it refers to specific offenses or juveniles or victims who have been the subject to particular offenses. Okay, so that's obviously not at play here when we're talking about restitution, right?
Correct.
So why that doesn't really even make sense to apply that one, that definition of a victim, because then not all victims would get restitution.
Correct. And but there's also another definition of a victim that's referred to in from the juvenile code that's found in 22.1.2 subsection 53 and states a victim's any natural person against whom the defendant in a criminal prosecution has committed or attempted to commit a crime. It doesn't include the as a result of language that this court found to be the basis for the causal connection in adult cases.
So even if you use that one, any person against whom the juvenile has committed a crime. Well, the crime he admitted to here was lying to prohibit the law enforcement or the state from prosecuting is probably the wrong word in a juvenile case, but from holding the individuals actually responsible for the act responsible. So how does that... That doesn't seem to help you out here either.
Well, I think because of his actions, he did do more than just lie to police. I understand that's what he admitted to, but the juvenile court had in front of it the police reports, which are part of the settled record, and were able to...
Were they admitted?
I'm sorry?
Were they admitted in front of the court as evidence?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
You know, you'd have a stronger argument if he was adjudicated for aiding and abetting. You know, it very much matters, wouldn't you say, what charge the client has been adjudicated for?
I agree, Your Honor. And unfortunately, we don't know why the state and NJW reached the agreement that they did. That's not part of the record.
And it might be stronger if we had a transcript that told us what he had actually allocated to. Perhaps he said something in his allocution, but we can't rely on that.
Correct, Your Honor. We don't know what
was
said.
We're left with the dispositional order.
I'm sorry, what was that?
We're left with what he acknowledged in the dispositional order.
Right, which was very basic, that he admitted to an accessory to a crime.
I mean, when you think about it, the state, I mean, imposing a causal requirement based on the statute, based on what might be a universal principle, doesn't really put the state at a disadvantage at all. The state still has an ability in appropriate cases to make a factual showing at the adjudication that, hey, admitted to this, the conduct is really more. And the state has the benefit of all kinds of agency doctrines. It's an uncharged conspiracy. It's Pinkerton. It's all these agency concepts that float around and extend criminal liability to more peripheral players. You could do that, but you'd have to have evidence of it. And I don't think we have that here. So the state can win on these. The state could seek to impose these successfully, even with a causal connection, but that's not this case, factually, in terms of the state of the record, at least as I see it.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, we have, you know, the juvenile court's order of restitution, you know, where she indicates the what she considered, I guess, in finding that the order of restitution, but there isn't anything in there regarding the facts of the case other than when she when the juvenile court judge sorry, I need to find it where she made that ruling.
Well, regardless of the ruling, if we determine that the causation requirement in SDCL 26.8B-6 sub 4 applies, is that standard met here based on what we have in front of us?
I would say that the case would need to be remanded to the juvenile court to make that determination. The court found that there was no causal connection required, and although she did kind of indicate this is what he did, to say that it would be in his best interest to award restitution, the juvenile court did not make a specific finding whether there was, in fact, a causal connection or not.
Would the court do it on the existing record, or would there be an opportunity to submit more evidence in your mind?
I think that the court could do it on the existing record. However, if I believe that the parties, if they want, should have the opportunity to submit.
Didn't the circuit court already have that opportunity? Why would we remand it for more findings when the court made the findings and felt they were adequate? If they're not adequate under the statute, why would we remand it for another bite at the apple, so to speak?
Yes, Your Honor. If the court feels that what the juvenile court had in front of it was sufficient to make a finding as to whether there was a causal connection or not, then I believe this court could make that order or could remand it for the court to enter an order with that finding based on the record currently in front of it without taking any more evidence.
Can you just very briefly address your second issue?
Yes, Your Honor. The juvenile court found that there was no credible evidence presented by JW at the restitution hearing that he would suffer a serious hardship if the restitution was imposed. JW called his mother to testify about her income and expenses, and on cross-examination, the state actually elicited the testimony that regarding whether JW himself had the ability to work or not. He's 15 years old. His mother testified that he did not currently work, he did not currently contribute to the household expenses, and that she wasn't sure whether he could obtain employment in the area where they lived. They had some transportation barriers. But despite that, the juvenile court found that that was no credible evidence of a serious hardship. He does have the ability to work. He could pay restitution if he obtained employment without affecting the family's financial situation, and that it's on JW to make those restitution payments and not his mother. And I see I'm out of time, so thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Olson, you can proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I want to begin just briefly about remanding for further findings and say that that's not necessary. The concept that a plea agreement was reached where a juvenile defendant admitted to accessory after the fact, those are the facts. Anything else contained in the settled record, those are disputed. We were set for trial for a reason.
Except we don't know what he allocated to because we don't have a transcript, but that would be available to the court. And the court never actually made a determination because the court said, I don't have to make a determination. So wouldn't it be appropriate to remand and let the court, on the record that the court had available to it, that we don't, make this post hoc determination?
I don't think it's necessary, Justice. Thank you for that question. If this court finds that the legislature had no ambiguity, that the purpose was, hey, we want restitution to be the same as it is in adult criminal cases, which I think is what they did, but it doesn't matter. That's what they said. Do it like adult criminal restitution. Okay,
then look at State v. Joyce. And you don't have to go any further than that. What did he plead to? It doesn't matter if there's a causal connection. He admitted to rear-ending that lady. He admitted to fault. But this court said, no, his criminal activity was leaving the scene of an accident. And that's as far as it has to go. It doesn't have to go back, and it doesn't make sense to go back. It's going to cause a problem where attorneys are going to go to trial rather than resolve cases if we have to worry about whether or not the judge is going to come back and make findings that weren't proven and they're under dispute. Because a circuit court judge could do that and just come in and make specific findings that, yeah, there was a causal connection here because of X, Y, and Z from the police reports and from what the state's attorney said at the disposition. Because a lot of times that is what happens, is it gets relayed what the allegations were when we go into the disposition. And if those findings are made, they're not being made off of evidence that was presented at a trial or at an evidentiary hearing and submitted. And I think that that would be problematic and push attorneys to say, well, we're going to have to go to trial on this because we don't agree with the restitution or the causal connection, and be a drain on the justice system. And I think it would be problematic if, in juvenile court, but especially if the court were to find, yes, this is the same as adult court, but now we're going to say that the judge can make findings that a causal connection exists based off of what was said in court.
After disposition or in connection with that, but at a restitution proceeding, could the state say, and this could be negotiated, leaving essentially restitution open, Could the state come in and say, if there were a causal connection requirement, and say, all right, pled to this, and that's our bargain, and it reflects, you know, negotiation and some concessions and mercy or whatever. But there's a financial component that more fairly and accurately reflects the extent of the juvenile's responsibility. Doesn't agree to it, so we're going to put on some evidence. And we're going to show that, no, notwithstanding the more minimal level of involvement that or complicity or culpability that's been admitted, it's actually more. We're not looking to impose more, you know, in terms of the adjudication, or excuse me, the ultimate disposition, but we are looking for more money.
I think that it's possible, but I think that that's why we have the plea negotiations between the attorneys, is if restitution is going to be an issue, then it should be on the prosecutor not to agree to something that's not going to have the criminal activity involved to get the restitution. But a fix could be to have an evidentiary hearing as part of the restitution and to establish that. I think the problem with that is, going back to State v. Joyce, where do you draw the line? Are we going to now get rid of trials and have evidentiary hearings that encompass everything? Where, if that were the case, we probably would just agree to it.
Well, once the rules are precisely defined, the practitioners will have a variety of options. But it does seem that, as a matter of fundamental fairness, that a juvenile should be responsible for what they're adjudicated for and the damages that flow from it. That seems to be your argument.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think that it should be limited to what they're agreeing to, as just a matter of fundamental fairness and due process, frankly, that they, leading up to their admission, nothing is decided. No evidence is in. When they admit, they are admitting to that thing, not to everything else. And to then taken from the side is not fair to the juvenile, who could have just taken it to trial and possibly won. And so I don't think going back to the court would do any good. With that, I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.